Today is April 13th, 2010. I'm Sherry Bowers, Local History Coordinator of the Milan Berlin Township Public Library. And I'm sitting here with Patrick Welfley, retired school teacher, athletic director, coach, and assistant principal for Medicine High School. The conversation that we're going to have this morning is about starting with Don Day at Edison High School, and then we'll move on and talk about Pat's role at the high school and what he's done in this area. So first of all, Pat, I'd like to focus on this photograph that Larry Lambert took 20 years ago of Donald Day, Edison High School teacher and rifle coach. Share with me, what you knew about Don Day, going back to when you first met Don, and a little bit about him.
All right. Actually, it started at a Boy Scout camp, my first memories of Don, because the Boy Scout leader was going to retire and Don Day was taking over. And we were actually at a camp, and he stuck his head in the door and kind of introduced himself to everybody. And gosh, I was probably in the, I don't know if it was eighth grade or something like that. It would have been 65, 66, something like that. That was the first time I met him. And then, of course, he was a teacher at Milan, actually, at that time when we, before we merged into Edison. And, of course, I had him for shop class. He taught industrial arts and drafting and that sort of thing. And he I just remember he was always so meticulous and really exact and everything. I think we were just making a little sanding block and it was seemed like a weird thing to do, but it was just, to cut angles and use hand tools and things like this, which, obviously nobody gets anymore, which they should probably. But, he was just a really good teacher, and that, it was nice and fun to be around him. And then, of course, I did teach with him. Well, even before that, then, it would have been probably 69. Yeah, 69, because we took a trip out west. He always took two or three students and went out west for a month or so, and I was fortunate enough to go. I think it was Alex Ross, Bruce Rockwell, and myself, and then Don Day. We went out at the end of June and all through July, and of course we had all sorts of memories there, one being the flood of 69. I think we were in Nebraska maybe at the time, and we heard it on the radio. They just broke into the radio broadcast, said the dam broke in Norwalk, Ohio. We're like, what's all that about, And of course, no cell phones or anything at the time. So we just, couldn't even call until we got to a payphone somewhere to see what was going on. And so we missed that whole experience, but it sounded like something to miss, I guess.
When you were out west, you got to see a historic event too.
Yes, we did. And that was really neat. When we were at Yellowstone Park there, we were actually in the lodge, and it was the day that they're stepping on the moon for the very first time, and the main lobby or whatever, where they had one black and white TV, I remember, up in the corner, and the place was packed. You couldn't hardly get around to see, but, it was really neat to watch that and out there at that place and watch them, land on the moon for the first time. It was pretty cool. So there's a lot of memories on that trip, and Of course, just how trips like that go, you always have things that happen that are fun and that you remember, that are personal to you. And that was just really neat with him. And then, of course, to teach with him, that was a neat thing too, he was my teacher. And then all once we're teaching together and working on things, and, he was teaching handicrafts and drawing. And then, of course, I was in the shop and did drawing too. So we still worked together, and he still taught me a lot of things because he was, been at it a while, and I was a new teacher, so it was fun.
Did Don, was he one of the teachers responsible for influencing you to go into teaching, would you say?
I don't know if he was so much with that. Actually, it's kind of funny, the one that probably was more instrumental in me going into teaching was my wrestling coach and teacher, Dave Kyle, who ironically was his roommate when they first were starting teaching. They lived together above the Wonder Bar, or not the Wonder Bar, the corner cupboard at that time, which the invention or whatever. And so that is kind of different there too, a little ironic, I guess. But, they lived together, I know, and I used to go up there and have popcorn with them and that sort of thing. And you know, just another little sidebar, I guess.
Interesting. And now, you know, I hear from people that knew Don Day how much of a mentor he was to them, or, you know, his influence. I mean, very good things about, I've heard about, you know, his, what he did at the school. Tell me about the rifle team, because, you know, not too many schools had, or I don't even know if any schools have rifle teams anymore in Ohio or anywhere, if that has gone because of you know, recent years and things that have happened. What about the rifle team? Can you give me some perspective about that?
Yeah, I don't, you know, I wasn't ever on the rifle team, but I did just know by being, well, athletic director and being, you know, teaching with him and that sort of thing. But the thing that I found amazing about the rifle team is, one, that it was in the school, which was pretty rare, because even the teams that they would compete against, even if they were school teams, they were still kind of more club teams, you know, outside of the actual school. To get that right in the school was a unique situation. And then to have the range right in the school was really a unique situation, which, you know, I don't think in this day and age it would probably go over too well at all. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I find, I guess, fascinating about that is, once I did go to the rifle range and experience it and that sort of thing, I was just amazed how organized it was, because it had to be organized. I mean, you can just, you know, if somebody in the shop throws a piece of wood or something, it's one thing. But if, you know, a stray shot goes somewhere, it's a whole different ballgame. So you really, really have to be, oh, disciplined with the kids and organized, and the whole program has to be so organized. And he was. I mean, boy, the kids just did exactly what they were told. And he was just, again, so meticulous with his organization and care of the guns and care of the safety. And, you know, it's just the way he was. And actually, you know, that was one thing that I was sad in a lot of ways to hear that he died. But I know one thing that I always wanted to do was to get more involved. I never really had a lot of experience with guns, and I always wanted to, you know, just go with him and, you know, and learn the more about guns and safety and that sort of thing and operation. And I never got a chance to do that, unfortunately.
Was he did he serve in the military, or why such a love for guns, or was he an avid hunter?
You know, he was, if I remember correctly, he was in the Navy, is what I'm thinking. You know, I might be wrong there, but I'm pretty sure he was in the Navy. In fact, he was older when he started teaching, because he mm-hmm. served in the service first and went to school, I believe, and then started teaching. So, and again, I could be a little bit wrong there, but I remember that he was in the service. So I'm sure that had a little bit to do with it. Mm-hmm. He was from Missouri, you know, which I know there's a lot of open area out there and stuff too. Mm-hmm. So I know he spoke of that. Of course, I said that wrong. He always says Missouri, or
Missouri,
I think is how you say it. He always would correct everybody on that.
You know, he's sitting in this photograph, he's sitting on the front porch, and that's of the house he built?
Yeah, yep. Actually, a lot of people helped him build that log cabin. That was really neat. And I only really got back there. See, I actually started teaching at Maumee High School for 4 years. So I'm thinking he had that house built about that time. So I wasn't involved in any of that. Mm-hmm. And or even when I was at college, it could have been when he had that built. But I had gone back there a couple times. It was just a beautiful little location way back off the road and in the woods. And
where was that?
You know, real simple. It was right off Old State Road.
Okay.
Just after you kind of go by Milan Manor mm-hmm. towards Norwalk.
Okay.
It was off to the right back there. I don't even know who he sold it to, actually, but it was just a really nice home. And I know a lot of I think it was built by everybody in the community, you know, kids and mm-hmm. people he knew, you know, all volunteered to help build it and that sort of thing. I know Jeff Goodwin, who's the principal now at Edison High School. Excuse me. He would go there every year and help him get wood in and stuff like that, you know, because, you know, he was getting a little bit older, Don was. Mm-hmm. So Jeff always helped him out, I know, doing that. It was a beautiful place back there.
It sounds like, of course, that Don had a great love for the outdoors, and you mentioned, I want to go back a little, you mentioned he would take a few students every summer, or a few students out to, now were they his students or just people, like he was in scouts, he would just...
No, it'd be students. He would just ask, you know, he wouldn't like, you know, so-called troublemakers or anybody like that. So, you know, he kind of handpicked the kids or, you know, would ask, you know, certain kids if they want to go out and knew that they liked outdoors and stuff like that. They didn't necessarily have to be a Boy Scout or anything like that.
Okay.
They were just anybody, any random student.
That, you know, looking at the photograph and him holding the rifle, wondering how long did, so he's the one who started the rifle team, correct? There
yes.
wasn't one that was there prior to that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm pretty okay. sure he started that. Because it used to be down in the basement in the, what we call the dungeon there at Milan.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ended up moving it upstairs to really what was it, the old shop,
mm-hmm.
the welding shop and the wood shop.
And course, when
now that's the office, I think, now, or that might even be something else now. I think they did change it again. So. Mm-hmm.
And that's at the old Milan High School,
yeah, correct? Milan High School, yeah, the old Milan building.
Now, when he retired, that kind of stopped with him, the club, didn't it? It didn't continue, did it?
It did for a few years, 1 or 2 years, but it was tough to come up with anybody that had that knowledge and expertise and that sort of thing. But I think the Roush... Shoot, I can't think of his name now. One of the Roushes, which there was some boys at school,
mm-hmm.
with Josh Roush. He was a student and was in the rifle club. And I'm thinking that his father maybe did it for a year or two.
Okay.
And it may have went on another year after that. But then it just got to be kind of a changing times with everything. And, you know, just I think the mystique of the guns and safety and in the school, you know, and a lot of people kind of didn't care for that too much anymore, and then it was hard to get somebody to do it, so it just kind of died out then.
Okay. you know, I'd like to switch a little bit gears. First of all, Pat, if you'd tell me a little bit about yourself, because the second photograph that was taken to kind of continue this project, Larry took a picture of you 20 years later, and I tell me a little bit about yourself, Pat. You grew up in this area, correct? And,
yeah, I was born on Plank Road, 5360 Plank Road. Lived there, well, I think maybe I was a few months old when we moved there. But my mom still lives in the same house. You know, she's 80, what is she now, 82 years old, I think. But I grew up there, you know, loved it. It just, you know, we had a fortunate to have basically a river valley on behind us on the east side and to the west side where Latham's lived,
mm-hmm.
Our Lou and Lyle Latham, and they were like second parents. And, you know, at that time in the, you know, late 50s and 60s, you know, of course, people didn't cruise around too much or go to many places. In fact, we very seldom, I think, even came to Milan, you know, just mm-hmm. because we didn't have any real reason to go anywhere. Especially we had a heaven there. It was just a beautiful place, you know, living in the woods and doing this and that and everything. We'd come into church and that sort of thing, about the only time we'd ever go anywhere. But, you know, went to, of course, Milan all the way to kindergarten. And then I think my sophomore year? Yeah, my sophomore year was when we merged into Berlin Heights and Milan merged together to become Edison. And
mm-hmm.
that was kind of a unique experience, just the fact that I remember the very first day, of course, you know, you didn't know many kids over that way because, like I say, people just didn't travel very far,
mm-hmm.
you know, at that time. And I remember the very first day we sat in the cafeteria, and it'd be an Edison, or not an Edison, but a Milan student, and then a Berlin Heights student, and a Milan student. Berlin Heights student had us all at the tables all set up.
Oh, they purposely put
you that purposely way. Put us that way, so you were kind of mixed in a little bit, you know. And I think everything went really well. For the most part, I mean, it was kind of tough because you didn't know. I don't think you, even when I graduated, I don't think our senior class, you know, was as close as most classes because you only knew some of the kids mm-hmm. for 2 years. So it was a little bit different, you know, as far as that aspect of it. But it went fine, I think, emerging.
I think it was hard, you know, what I've read or heard, you know, from some people, it was hard merging the two communities together. And mm-hmm. perhaps, like you said, it seemed like Berlin Heights was much farther away than it is now with
yeah.
people not going somewhere.
Right.
The decision, when the school district, the two school districts merged, you were put together, you said you were a sophomore at the time?
Yes, I was a sophomore.
Okay. But I know now that the two, there's Milan Elementary and, of course, Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
But now they merge when they're in middle school.
Right.
Did they start that off at the very beginning, merging them in middle school because...
You know, I am trying, I cannot remember. My brother, I remember he was in like, what grade would he have been? He would have been an eighth grader, I think. And I remember his classes, they had them down here in the square in Milan. They didn't have room yet because, of course, Edison High School wasn't built when they merged. So they had to do something. And I think above, like, where Dan Frederick's office is now, the architect there, they had classrooms up there. That's where my brother went to school, was in the Kelly Block, I believe is what it was. They had a couple classrooms up there. So I can't really remember if they did that or not. I really don't. I know the high school is together. I don't remember if the junior high was or not. I'm kind of thinking maybe not at that first year, the first few years or whatever, you know, but I wouldn't know for sure.
When you graduated from school, high school, you went on, you knew you wanted to go and become a teacher, correct?
Actually, it was about halfway through my first year. You know, I'm one of those undecided guys, didn't know really what I wanted to do. I enjoyed, construction. I had always, of course, you know, did a lot of hands-on stuff, living on a farm. You know, we lived on a farm forever and actually farmed the land, that sort of thing. And then I raised farm animals, actually pigs for 4-H, or not 4-H, but an FFA project through school. So I enjoyed doing that type of stuff. So I was thinking about doing some sort of a construction, you know, major or something like that. But, you know, didn't really know. And, of course, I was involved in sports. And they wanted, at Toledo University, they kind of wanted me to play football. But I didn't really know if I wanted to. So I didn't that first year. And I was actually at Toledo University for 1 year. And I remember that winter, my wrestling coach again, Dave Kyle, I saw him at a tournament and we were talking and he asked me what I wanted to do. And I said, I don't know what I want to do. And he goes, well, did you ever think about, you know, coaching and teaching? You know, and I said, well, a little bit, you know, but not really too much. So then that got me thinking about it. And I thought, well, that might not be a bad thing to do. And I the next year I started doing that. I transferred actually to Bowling Green because he knew the wrestling coach at Bowling Green because Dave Kyle wrestled at Bowling Green. So he said, well, let me call him and see if we can get you in there. So I ended up getting a third scholarship at Bowling Green. That would have been 72, would have been my first year there. And it was $800, I remember. I always tell my wife, my third scholarship was $800 as well. You know, so it didn't cost too much to go to school. So I ended up wrestling there for 4 years and getting a degree in industrial technology. And actually, I had another year's eligibility to wrestle because I transferred from Toledo. So I actually had to sit out a year. That's kind of the rules that you have in the school. So I wasn't eligible my first year at Bowling Green. So I ended up going another year. I kind of enjoyed school and it was kind of fun. So I figured I'd go another year and wrestle, which of course I should have probably just got out a year earlier, but it worked out fine. But I enjoyed wrestling at Bowling Green and getting that degree. And I also, like I was going to mention, I got a degree in physical education too, just because I went that one extra year. So that gave me, you know, more time to get another major. So then I, after I graduated, then that's my first job, I say, was in Maumee High School. And I taught there for 4 years. And in 1980, I came back here and then, of course, was here for 26 more. Until I retired then in 2006. So a lot of things in between, but.
So your former wrestling coach was the one who influenced you, and because I had asked you earlier about it,
right.
There was really any influence from Don Day, but you said it was your former wrestling coach?
Yeah, Dave Kyle. He came here. Oh gosh, he's the one that really got wrestling going back in those early years, and 67, 68, that sort of thing. That's kind of when that sport really kind of got going here. Denny Corrigan from Norwalk, he had a real good program. And I think it was Bob Bailey from Bellevue and Dave Kyle. And they were all probably about the same age. And they were all had wrestled, I think, in college and knew, you know, it was just kind of the sport was just getting going in this area then. And then all three schools had really good programs and still do pretty well. But yeah, he was He was the main guy that kind of pointed me that direction, just because I wrestled for him, and he thought I'd be a decent coach, and you know, teach, and you know, I liked doing teaching shop and stuff. So it all kind of worked out well, and that's what I've been doing.
You know, I have to ask you this, because I remember when I went through school, industrial arts, even in middle school, was a big thing. I mean, a lot of people took shop class. Well, it was usually just called shop class, or that's what we referred to it as. And I think I look at my younger son, who I think would love shop class, and unfortunately, these programs have seemed to diminish in schools. What's happened, or why is that so? Is it just this area? The industrial arts program, did every school at one time have an industrial arts program?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everyone had them. And I know most schools in the at least eighth grade, everybody was required to take it. It kind of went hand in hand. One semester would be, you know, home economics and that sort of thing. And then the next semester would be, you know, a shop class type thing where you would learn, you know, how to do things with your hand. And
that's what I remember, although I don't recall that it was a requirement for me, for the school I went to, but I do remember both the industrial arts and home ec seemed to go hand in hand. Either had to take one or the other. If I think that's how it went in the school I went to.
Yeah. And it's a shame that it's basically just your political bureaucratic type situation that has made it not, you know, made them fade away, just because of there's just so many mandates and added courses now. You know, you used to have to take two math classes and like two science classes, where now you have to take four math classes and you know, a lot of different mandates that come down from the state that make it basically you have to get rid of your electives. There's very, very few electives out there anymore because there's no room for electives. And it's really kind of a, you know, it almost seems like anyone I talk to feels the same way, that it'd be a lot better to have that type of stuff in the schools yet, because I mean, what do you do the rest of your life? You know, you own a home and you do this and you do that. And, you know, most people don't know how to do anything because they've never had any training anywhere. I mean, I guess the administrative end of it said, well, if you want to get that type of education, you know, you go to your vocational school like Ehobee and that sort of thing. But that's not what you go to Ehobee for, as far as I'm concerned. You go there for a career, you know. But I mean, everybody needs to know how to wire switch and do this type of thing, and you know, and of course you need hobbies and things too. So it's a shame that it's not there anymore, and it's not school's fault, because they don't have enough time in the day to do it. It's basically your state's fault and your government's fault that making you making everybody, even if you're a, I don't know, you don't need the math and science, you still have to take the math and science. So
that seems to be I know that that seems to be the thing that I hear people talk about the most, is just how those electives have kind of gone by the wayside. And I remember, for a lot of people, I think that's an enjoyable experience, because it's just something different in your day, and it's hands-on for a lot of people. And it is interesting to learn some of the things that maybe people don't get exposed to. But, you know, working with your hands, or, you know, some of the things that were taught in home ec, sewing are basic things that you need to know. It's just a nice aside to have electives, it seems like.
Yeah, it is. There's no doubt about it. Like, you know, not everyone, as much as maybe everyone would like to be, or the government or whoever, the administrative people, personnel wants everyone to be a scientist. Not everybody's going to be a scientist. Nobody. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't want to do that, but, you know, they want to live a good life and enjoy themselves, but you know, and they need to have stuff like that, I think, a little bit more electives and things.
I want to ask you about something, because of your involvement with wrestling, and you talked about how the program kind of built up around this area because of key people that were teaching at different schools and knew about wrestling. Sports in school, I mean, I've noticed that in different school districts now we see other sports springing up. Soccer has made somewhat of a not using the word comeback, because it didn't make a comeback, but soccer started up in this area. I don't know how many years ago, but it seems to be growing.
Yeah.
Do you see staying intact still, of course, football, basketball, wrestling, and baseball? What other sports do you see emerging that possibly could emerge? Or do you think it's more going to be more dependent on funding?
Well, that's the unfortunate thing, the funding and the actual kids themselves, because, mm-hmm. you know, everybody wants to have this and that. And, you know, bowling is a big thing now, and that's fine. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with any sport, but the problem is probably twofold. One, funding, and the other would be participants, because you can't have so many things and only so few athletes. It spreads everyone out, and then right. it kind of, and it does, it kind of weakens the programs for the most part. And actually, it seems like, oh, there's so much specialization anymore, where kids used to always, you know, when I played sports, I did three sports a year, you know, and participated in everything. But now, you know, the world's completely changing, and you know, everybody wants to just concentrate on one sport, whether it be basketball or football or whatever it might be. And mm-hmm. so therefore you don't have participants going out for the other sports. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think it kind of weakens things a little bit for the most part. And there's so much, just society itself, there's so many more things to do. I mean, mm-hmm. when I was going through, there was nothing really to do other than work or play sports, you know. And now, of course, you can get in your car and go anywhere in 5 minutes, and you got all sorts of electronic devices and things that mm-hmm. take up kids' times. And mm-hmm. So I think that's probably hurt things as far as athletics more than anything. And that's, you know, the best thing about athletics is just the discipline, the self-discipline and motivation you get from it, where mm-hmm. that kind of worries me a little bit, because I don't think there's much of that around anymore. And that's, mm-hmm. I think, leads to a lot of problems. I really do.
Sports and young girls, that seems to have, and I don't know, because I'm certainly not an authority on it, but it just, from what I've read, it seems to be girls in sports, it's really expanded. Mm. And did you see that? When did you see that trend really start? Because I'm thinking of, refresh my memory on Title IX and when things started to change, because you taught for a long mm-hmm. period. When did you see girls sports really start to take off in this area?
They, you know, it was with the Title IX thing. I remember back when I was in school that we used to have, you know, the GAA, the Girls Athletic Association, which was something that, it was an organization for girls, but it really wasn't an organized sports through the Ohio High School Athletic Association or anything like that. But then with the Title IX situation, gosh, when was that? That was in the 70s. I mean, that it basically started changing right away. But, you know, of course, I was in college from, 71 to 76. So that's right when all of that stuff was going on. And of course, I was, when you're in college, you're away from the world a little bit, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't pay attention to that stuff too much. But right away then, when I started teaching, you know, there's all the girls' programs already going on in, you know, 1976. And you know, that's when, you know, your basketball and that sort of thing, of course. And softball are probably two of the main ones. And then, of course, volleyball got going too, which I think now volleyball is probably stronger than, you know, a lot of the sports, actually.
Did it seem to increase, though, when you were teaching or in coaching, or when you were during your career at all? Because it seems like there are so many more girls in sports, and I don't know if there's mm-hmm. numbers out there, there's a percentage out there, but it just seems like there's so much more, or so many more girls participating in sports than even when I was in school, when I graduated in 82.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are definitely more so than in the 80s, just because of just that's kind of a societal trend, I guess. You know, there's a lot more programs, specialized programs for them too, you know, the AAU and the JO volleyball and that sort of thing. I mean, they play year round anymore. And mm-hmm. I think the parents, you know, the 80s parents are, you know, they played a little bit. Well, now they have kids, so they have their kids play all the time, so it just kind of the way it works. But yeah, I think in a lot of ways there's probably as many girls play as boys in a lot of areas and a lot of I don't know how you would say that, per capita or whatever, percentage-wise or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's girls. I mean, it's almost just expected that girls play anymore, just like, you know, used to be the boys, you know. But mm-hmm. now the girls always are involved and expected to be in sports if they're, you know, athletically inclined or whatever.
What would you, we talked a little bit about industrial arts program and in not having the electives. What are some of the other changes or things that you would like to see? Or at least schools go back to, or is, do you have any perspective on that or some strong opinions? Because, you know, I spoke with former teacher Janine Williams and, you know, Milan Elementary principal. And it's always interesting to hear what people have to say about, you know, the state of education.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we're looking for answers too, I think.
Yeah, well, the way I would like it to go, it would never go back to, because I'm pretty much old school. As far as, well, when I first taught for 5 or 6 years anyway, you know, we could still use capital punishment and paddle. And I used to paddle kids and, mm-hmm. and, you know, of course that's no longer allowed or acceptable, but it's my real opinion that that's the problem with about everything. Mm-hmm. It's just that type of attitude, you know, everything's a yes, yes, gimme, gimme, gimme. And, you know, give type situation as opposed to having to work for anything. And like I say, the discipline just doesn't seem to be there anymore. The mm-hmm. self-discipline with kids, I mean, the expectations, you know, mm-hmm. everything's right there for them. You can have anything you want at any time and you don't really have to work for it. And, you know, that attitude, you know, of course, I think is in the school situation too. Mm-hmm. The just discipline just doesn't seem to be near as what it used to be. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier about sports, I mean, not that you need to, you know, beat up kids or anything, but just the mental discipline and mm-hmm. and the internal discipline is so great in sports. I mean, that's, you know, that's the thing I tell my kids all the time. I said the things you learn from being in athletics isn't how many wins and losses you have, but you know what it teaches you about your work ethic and mm-hmm. and getting along with others and I think so much of that is gone mm-hmm. anymore. And it's a sad thing.
Seems like technology, too, has really changed things. You know, talking about things at hand. I mean, certainly kids have information constantly at their fingertips. And mm-hmm. and I think that's that seems to be a part that's really impacted education, whether it's good or bad or mm-hmm. Somewhere in between.
Yeah, it definitely is, I think, good and bad. There's no doubt that it's very convenient to be able to get information right now. I mean, it's very useful. There's no doubt about that. But like you say, at the same time, it's, you know, as far as your, you know, the way you are and your discipline and how you carry yourself. And, you know, I think I don't think there's as much caring a lot of times for other people just because you don't need to. You know, you can get by without other people, where you used to have people, you know, mm-hmm. help you and be friends and work together and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's not that way all the time, but it's definitely more that way than it used to be. But you know, my kids always laugh at me just even texting, just because, you know, it takes me forever to find the buttons and do mm-hmm. this and that. And they're just, you know, going like crazy. And so I'm definitely on the lower end of all that type of stuff. But the technology is very, I think, important and can be very dangerous. You know, it's just, that's the thing that's kind of crazy about it, I guess.
Interesting. You know, if you were teaching industrial arts today, of course, you would be relying a lot on the computer, though, to help with some of the designs and things that you would use, just like, you know, the smart boards. I think going into a classroom anymore, it's almost expected that there's a smart board in there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, my daughter, she teaches up at St. Paul. Of course, being retired, I get volunteered a lot to do things, and I put up a lot of smart boards in their school and that sort of thing. And, you know, that type of stuff is just amazing. And every day there's something more coming out that's new and advanced and quicker, and mm-hmm. and it's neat. But like I say, it's, you know, there's some good old hometown skills that would still be nice to give out to everyone.
I'd like to kind of kind of conclude or talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned hometown, and actually the title of this, Larry's first project, is Hometown Portraits. What can you tell me or anything to add that you'd want to add about growing up in this area, the hometown? You gave a little bit at the very beginning about where you grew up on Plank Road, mm-hmm. and any perspective on this area or your feelings on the community?
Well, I think probably most people are pretty proud of their hometown area, but at the same time, I'm probably a little bit more biased, and I think most people in this area should be a little bit more biased, just because the northern part of Ohio here, there's just so many places to go and so much to do with, you know, being right by the lake, and of course we've got rivers and things like that for outdoors, and then, you know, we're right in between Toledo and Cleveland, too. You know, pretty large cities, so it's real quick to get to either one of those for, you know, for even higher level things as far as, you know, your arts and things like that, museums, art museums and things like that, if that's what you enjoy doing too. So, I mean, I think we're really very lucky to be in this location because, you know, the town of Milan and the surrounding areas are still relatively country and rural. Mm-hmm. You know, but like say in 45 minutes or half hour, even you can be in the heart of the city and, you know, watching a, you know, major league game, whether it be football or whatever sport you want anymore. And so I've always thought that that's really a neat thing, you know, that you can go to the lake and you can go to the islands and, mm-hmm. and there's just a lot to do around here, no matter what, you know, what you like to do. You know, it seems like there's a lot of things where, you know, some play, I go out west still quite a lot. My brother used to live out there, and actually I guess that was early 80s, and I used to go out and see him every year, and now about every couple of years we take trips out west. And I mean, you get to, God, what did we go through, Kansas? I mean, there's just nothing but nothing on Kansas. It's just flat and grasslands. I mean, there's just nothing there. I mean, it's pretty to see, you know, the prairies and that sort of thing, but mm-hmm. as far as you live there, you know, you'd be pretty much like, what do I do? Because there's no way. You don't just jump in 20 minutes, you're in at a movie theater or something like that. So that's why I kind of like this area, because you can still be out in the country in a way and not have the hustle and bustle of the city yet. You know, if you want to do that, you can. Right. So I think that's really a neat thing about this area.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way, and you are right. We do. There's a lot to offer in this area. Mm-hmm. Anything else that you'd like to add, Pat, about the teaching or anything in general that you can think of that to this interview?
I can't really think anything in specific. Just generally, it's just I really enjoy it. I know when I was at Edison there for all those years, I guess enlisted a lot of people to help volunteer, do a lot of things. I tried to do things, you know, to get things done, but be cost effective. So I had a lot of people that I think helped me out, worked with me and that sort of thing. And that was probably one of the more enjoyable aspects of, you know, teaching and administrative and things like that, especially in a smaller town. You know, I think you get more of that type thing with the athletics and the whole complex out there at Edison. Mm-hmm. You know, we did a lot of work ourselves and a lot of people that helped me do that. You know, you have fun doing that. You know, we'd have steak feeds and things like that. And, you know, just getting together with people. It was enjoyable. And it still is. I still enjoy, you know, getting around people and that sort of thing. But yeah, that Don Day, you know, also just that, looking at that picture again of him on the front porch with his gun, it's just, you know, it's just kind of how he was. He was always just kind of a sincere, I guess maybe a little bit more of a sober type person, you know, but he enjoyed himself, and it was good that he was around here. I think he helped out a lot of the area people and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate you giving us the opportunity to talk, you know, to listen to, you know, give your perspective of Don Day and, you know, working with him, and actually, you know, when you had first met him. I thank you very much for the interview.
Sure thing.